Welcome to Didn't I Blow Your Mind This Time. I'm Duncan.
I'm Lex.
And this is the podcast where Lex and I take turns trying to blow each other's minds with our respective movie picks. Could be something obscure, could be something mainstream. The only rule is that the other co-host cannot have seen the movie already. So yeah, we really run the gamut on this show.
And it's my go-round. I picked something that is pretty hard to get your hands on. I feel like we've been upholding that this season. We didn't. I don't think we mentioned it that Wild at Heart is not streamable and has to be acquired on DVD or VHS. And this is another one like this. But I, Duncan, I don't know how you got this movie, but I got it. I have a deep throat connection that can hook me up with these very difficult to find movies, and I'm not going to blow up his spot, but I do thank my deep throat for Day of the Dolphin from 1973.
Interesting. You had to go deep throat. Sounds like somebody needs to join their local library.
Uh-oh.
Because I was able to just get it on Canopy, and you
streaming?
Know, streaming on Canopy.
Oh, the library.
And probably some of our listeners know that they can find me on Canopy. About
oh, is that
20...
right? You have a profile, a public profile?
Okay. Well, I have a VIP. Canopy reached out because they know I'm a fan through Twitter and asked me to pick a few of my Canopy faves for the kids. So that's up on the Instagram, and you can kind of see what's scratching my itches.
Okay.
What's my what's the saying?
I don't know, but I'm grossed out.
Anyway, this was not on there because I haven't seen this until now.
I wished I could have been there, right there next to you on your tight little couch, to watch the credits roll as Day of the Dolphin shows up. Then it says George C. Scott. Then it says Mike Nichols. Then it says Buck Henry. Pow! I have to have Duncan with that kind of lineup.
Joseph E. Levine presents George C. Scott in a Mike Nichols film, The Day of the Dolphin.
Well, I don't really love where you're going with this. You're assuming like I just fell off the turnip truck and don't know anything about where this movie, the origins of this movie.
Now,
having just put down Mark Harris's excellent Mike Nichols biography, which I highly recommend. I'm quite aware of Day of the Dolphin, and I know it was a very painful shoot.
Okay, well, I can't wait to hear those details. I'm just going to set it up a little bit by saying that it is based on a book by a French sci-fi writer named Robert Merle. The French title was Un Animal Doué de Raison. I don't know if I'm correctly pronouncing that, but it translates as a sentient animal. It is loosely based on the actual real-life work of neuroscientist John C. Lilly, who was kind of a counterculture phenomenon back then in the 60s and 70s, along with his buddy Timothy Leary.
And John C. Lilly.
Also inspired 1980s Altered States, directed by Ken Russell.
What a fun double feature that'd be.
I mean, come on. And then afterwards, you video game nerds can play Echo the Dolphin, which is also sort of sourced on off of Lily's work.
I mean, he did everything. The sensory deprivation tank,
yep.
The drugs, the
now,
dolphin
have you ever
stuff.
Done a sensory deprivation tank?
I haven't. It was on my list of things to do 3 or 4 years ago. I think I looked one up in Venice, California.
Okay. I was confused.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I've kind of lost.
I remember as a kid, we had a field trip where a bunch of middle schoolers were going to go to a sensory deprivation tank, and my mom would not approve the waiver. So I was the only one who didn't go on that field trip. So I have not been in a sensory deprivation tank. I don't know. I guess my mom was weirded out by the fact that.
Was this like a religious thing? Did she think
I
this was
no
the,
idea.
The devil's
Maybe.
Workshop?
Yeah.
Sitting Did she think you couldn't bath, handle it?
Being too buoyant, what that might do to my mind.
She's like, I've seen this kid in a he can't even handle a bubble bath. He's not going to be able to handle a sensory deprivation tank. Okay. Yeah.
So never done it. Back to the film. It was originally going to be directed by Polanski, Roman Polanski. And then I automatically thought of you. Rewind to your paranoia about Hollywood with who invited them. Because while Polanski was on a location scout in the UK, the Manson family murdered Sharon Tate. And so he had bigger things on his plate than handling this movie. And so it it ends up with Mike Nichols with George C. Scott attached, and they make it in 1973.
Well, first of all, thanks for crowbarring a reference to my film in there.
Oh, you bet.
Listeners that haven't seen the movie, there's a couple little Manson-y breadcrumb references in the film.
Uh-huh. But you told me that that always is in the back of your mind as a Hollywood resident. You just can't help but lock the door, double check the locks.
I keep Helter Skelter by my bed for that reason, to remind me. Someone can just waltz in at any moment and completely murder you. My first apartment in Los Feliz, if you remember, the Rex Deo.
Oh, yeah.
It was just a hop, skip, and a jump from the La Bianca murder's house on the other side of the hill.
Oh.
And I'll tell you what, I did actually go up to the Manson house before. I believe it's torn down now. I think it was after Trent Reznor lived there, but it was still up. And our friend took me up there to buy some weed from a guy that lived two doors down. And he sold me some weed. I also bought a barbecue grill and put it in my car. We could fit it in my Cherokee. And he also, when I was thinking about this the other day, I was so dumb. He also gave me a DVD out of a box of DVDs of some no-budget movie he shot his house using the proximity to the Manson murder house as like a hook.
As a hype machine.
I took inspiration from that. Well, no, I was a real dullard at the time. I don't think I watched the movie. I've been trying to think about where it might be. And I wasn't as impressed. I mean, if someone took me up near the Manson house now, if that was possible, I mean, I would be.
Why is it not there?
I believe it's demoed. But I believe at this time in like 2001, it was there. Gated up, but still I wasn't as steeped in the lore as I am now, having read so much about the Manson murders.
Back to dolphins. So I'm totally interested to know about the drive to Nichols doing this film, because I know more of the George C. Scott side, but less of the Mike Nichols. He was on a hot streak.
He was on a hot-ish streak, I believe. And I don't have the book with me. I had to return it to the library. Really plugging the LAPL right now. But Mike Nichols had done Catch-22, which was
not successful. On. Virginia Woolf, The Graduate, Catch-22, and Carnal Knowledge. Is that not a hot streak?
I mean, well, you're not even start. Let's start. Let's rewind a little bit. A comedy legend with Elaine May, and then was a theater director ingenue, which is kind of what's so interesting about the book. Because I knew those things, but I didn't realize, this guy was at the top of his field in three different fields. Yes, hot streak, but Catch-22 did put a chink in his armor.
Oh, really? I didn't realize it was such a not a hit.
I don't believe it was a hit. I think there's an interesting story. He goes to see MASH, the Robert Altman movie. Maybe it was a sneak preview of MASH, and turned to whoever he was with. Maybe it was Buck Henry. Let's say it was Buck, just for the story.
Yeah, sure.
And it's like, oh wow, these guys are eating our lunch. In terms of though they're doing the Korean War,
compared to what they're doing.
Well, it's subversive. It's taking that kind of black humor lens and putting it over the war. And I believe the movie came out before Catch-22. MASH kind of out Catch-22 Catch-22.
Got it.
And I was a huge Catch-22 fan of the novel, like everyone. I think the movie's interesting. It's gorgeous. I mean, the cast is it's like Wes Anderson level casting, with everyone from Anthony Perkins to Bob Newhart to whoever, Martin Bassam and Buck Henry, and our dearly departed just recently, Alan Arkin,
yep.
who is the consummate Yozarian. Like, no matter how you feel about the movie, right. I mean, he is so good as Yozarian, and a very dark role by Charles Grodin. If you know the film, it is dark Grodin, and a great dark comic turn by John Boyd. Anyway, Orson Welles is in it. Everybody.
Oh wow!
And the movie looks beautiful. But I don't think it's it's kind of a little bit of a misfire, but an interesting movie. I did not see the George Clooney Catch-22 TV series.
Oh, evacuated my brain.
It's just not, it just didn't seem like a good idea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he had a couple of those.
So I don't know what the impetus was to do this. I think it might have been some dough. It didn't sound like, from my memory of the book, that his heart was in it. I mean, the project must have had some prestige and pedigree to have Polanski attached in the first place.
Yeah.
I usually try and, if not read, at least flip through the books if we're talking about an adaptation. I did not get a chance to pick up
you don't know
Day
French.
At the Dolphin. I don't know French well. And I can't say I don't know. I don't know how much of a departure it is. It sounds like this was not a good match of material and director from the get-go.
Well, I think George C. Scott was also doing well at the time. He got a $750,000 paycheck for the movie. I think post-Patton, he was a big star. The movies that came before it, I don't know that they were giant hits, but they are definitely cool movies. There's the Last Run, The Hospital, The New Centurions, and Rage, which he directed. I think at least three of those have been covered by the crew over at New Beverly.
Our competition over at the Tarantino Roger Avery podcast. I was just about to say that. I am due for a Centurions, Rage. What was the other one you said? Not The Hospital, but the other one.
The Last
George C. Scott. Yeah, The Last Run. George
then,
C. Scott Marathon.
I think it's called The Savage Island comes after that, which sounds totally insane. I really want to see that. When I saw this movie originally, I think I was really on a George C. Scott kick because he is incredibly watchable. He just chews up everything in front of him. And then I say that the movie I was obsessed with at the time was Exorcist III, which has now been has gained a little esteem. Whereas it tanked at the time.
Top five Brad Dourif performances.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think it's a fantastic movie. It has some awesome scary moments.
Oh yeah, that zoom. That's the masterclass in horror
totally.
Zooming. I mean, Dourif with a perm, terrifying. Terrifying.
We still have to watch Body Parts with Brad Dourif, which whether it's for this podcast or somehow together, that's a good one. So he's got some heat, and then there's the on-screen chemistry of real life couple George C. Scott and Trish Van Devier, who got together on The Last Run. And you'd think, well, maybe we got something. And no, it's a box office failure. I would think that the big George C. Scott paycheck doesn't help things either. It sounds like he was difficult on set as well. And then
maybe took a little three-day vacation.
Uh-huh. He had a virus.
I don't think the Irish flu.
Oh.
I don't think we're talking out of class when if we chat about George C. Scott was a bit of a drinker.
Uh-huh.
Bit of a drinker. I don't think that's a secret.
There was somebody I feel like I heard that he would pal around with on Broadway, between shows, after shows, and God, you would just think that these guys raised hell. It might have been Robards, or it was like Oliver. What's his face?
Oliver Reed.
Oliver Reed. Oh my God, can you imagine these maniacs? These insane drunk gorillas just smashing into each other. And I mean, to be a fly on the wall. But yeah, so not good for anyone involved. Nichols goes on to make The Fortune in 1975, which, Duncan, I had never heard of. Do you know about this?
I have not seen it. I've know a few people that say it's better than its reputation, but I have not seen it.
Oh, really? So this is with Warren Beatty and Jack Nicholson, which you would think, hey, in 1975, does it get better?
It doesn't get any hotter.
And evidently, it was a big tanker, too, and so much so that Nichols steps away from the feature directing chair until Silkwood in 1983, which, I mean, hey, who can deny what a great movie that is?
He moved into the Meryl Streep stage of his career.
I like it. And it's okay by me.
They always joke about how they kind of look alike, which they do.
Who?
Meryl and Mike Nichols.
Oh, yeah. Okay, really I can do. See that. But this movie...
I've noticed a trend of you picking movies to blow my mind with that are at the tail. It's almost like just when someone's career is imploding. I'm thinking of Clifford. Wait, what if... It's like the movie that blew up someone's career is kind of your sweet spot.
I think that's where greatness lives. I think that that's always worth a reevaluation. I have to admit, I didn't quite remember a lot of this movie. I just remembered that I enjoyed it, was surprised by it, and this go round, I fucking loved it.
Wow.
It is a animal movie for adults, which for me, that is rare because I was scarred as a kid by all those movies that we saw as wee pups, like Benji and the Black Stallion and all that stuff, just and even E.T., that stuff just made me sob. And so I was always kind of afraid of animal-oriented movies. But man, this one gets me, Duncan.
Okay, an animal movie for adults. Don't Google that, kids. It'll come up with some really nasty
especially
choices.
Dolphins' current reputation.
Yes, as a former Floridian, I can tell you I've not experienced it.
You've been assaulted by dolphins?
No, but I know people who have. So
you know people who have been molested by dolphins?
If you live in Florida,
get out of my
face.
Everyone's got a
story of, no! And then we were headed to the Keys and I saw a sign and we thought, wouldn't that be fun to just jump in the, you know, the dolphin hole for a little bit? And those things are so frisky. I mean, now everybody knows, but in the 80s.
Right.
It wasn't as known. Okay, well, no. When I think of a fun animal movie for adults, my mind goes to something like Babe, Pig in the City. But okay. Well, I'm glad that you watched this movie after not having seen it for a while and still enjoyed it, as opposed to like Ricochet, where you were like, hold it, I thought this movie was about Denzel Washington getting AIDS. I'm glad you remembered there was an actual dolphin in the film and all tracked. Okay.
Yep. This one did not let me down like Ricochet. So should we dive in to the film itself?
Let's dive right in with a big dolphin-y splash.
It starts right there, right up on George C. Scott's mug. Right into camera, and he's addressing the camera like Rod Steiger. He is sweating within seconds. and what he does is he describes the existence of dolphins as basically a sort of an ecstatic super being. And then that's intercut. He basically is telling the audience about dolphins and what is so special about them. And it's intercut with Paul Sorvino, who appears to be torturing dolphins in slow motion. He's testing their intelligence. We don't really know what the context is, but he tries to trick a dolphin in this intercut scene.
Trick a dolphin.
A dolphin doesn't go for it.
I thought he exposed the trainer for the dolphin not being properly trained. You know what? This is a very dumb digression for someone who hasn't seen the film. So keep going. But I do want to just talk about what a big shaggy teddy bear Paul Sorvino is. This this in cruising, I like my Sorvino sloppy, shirt untucked, and in need of a haircut. Where he's kind of oddly threatening, but he's also just this big shaggy dog.
It's perfect. He does that exactly in this movie, and it is menacing and lovable all at once. I was captivated by
it. He's very good.
So Scott, as his character is Dr. Tyrell, Jake Tyrell. Is it? I can't remember. Is it Tyrell? I'm going to say.
I think it's Tyrell.
Okay. That makes me think of Blade Runner. So, he talks about, the dolphin living in two worlds, as a water mammal.
His brain is as big as a man's. It processes information about two worlds, the world of water in which he is born and feeds and reproduces and dies, and the world of air in which he breathes.
And we go wide. It's a reveal that he is addressing an audience and answering, and it goes into a Q&A where folks start asking questions about the dolphins. And what we discover is that it's basically a requirement of his situation as a scientist. The foundation he works for needs a little bit of budget glad handing. Part of the fundraising that they do involves interaction with the public and a little bit of education. And that's what we're seeing here.
Is it possible that dolphins are as intelligent as we are?
Well, that depends on your definition of intelligence.
What about the experiments that the military are?
I don't know anything about the military.
What about their speaking in English?
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, it's a really strong opening. I think some of that framing's in Catch 22, which is also a really beautiful film as well. I'm totally drawn in from the beginning. I'm getting kind of like a paranoid 70s Alan Pakula vibe off of this. There's something sinister. You don't know what's going on with these dolphins. And George C. Scott's character is obsessed.
Yeah, we're still in the dark, even as we, so he, we understand that this is a requirement that he hates, the money aspect of his job. And as quickly as he can, he jumps on a boat and goes to the island where he has a research facility. And he has this team of young scientists that all work under him, as well as his wife, played by Trish Van Devere. And when we meet her, we discover that the dolphin that he was talking about in the Q&A is a teenage dolphin that was born and raised in captivity named Alpha. And in when we meet Trish Van Devere, it sounds like he has been rambunctious. He hurt her. And he's basically in his teenage years, and he's not as controllable maybe as he once was.
You know what those teenage dolphins are like. They take, take,
frisky,
take.
As you said.
There's a lot made in this sequence of the movie of Scott caring more about the dolphins than he does about his
beautiful wife.
And he doesn't even care. She's injured, but all his thoughts are with the dolphin. I kind of wanted them to thread a little more, because I'm settling in and I'm like, oh, wow. When I see George C. Scott, it's funny you mentioned Rod Steiger, because I thought of him too watching this. When I see Scott or Steiger in a movie, I am settling in for the slow burn for when the rage is going to bubble over. Like, that's what I get excited about with these two actors. So I'm looking for what the toxic button that George C. Scott has that's going to be pushed, that's going to, you know, cause him to blow his top. And I was like, oh boy, you know, somebody is going to manhandle these dolphins and he is going to flip a lid, because he doesn't even give an F that his gorgeous wife is all messed up here.
That would be in the file.
It is not in the file. It is not.
There's a great moment where we pan across the island at night, And it really sets the stage for this location, which is an important part of the film, and also this ensemble cast, everybody in their place as they settle in for the evening. So without much dialogue, we get a sense of character for each one of them. And then there's like 1 to 2 minutes of George C. Scott having left his wife behind and finally back on the island. And the first thing he does at night all by himself is just jump in the dolphin tank and just kind of wrestle with Alpha. And what's established there is their bond and their love for one another. And starting here, and even with a little bit of the setup before you meet Alpha, there is a lot of commitment to creating this dolphin as a believable character. And I think it really works and pays off across the movie, and it starts here.
Yeah, the production design in this movie is through the roof. This is a very pricey, beautiful-looking movie. I should have done the research and looked up. I'm not sure where this was filmed. I'm assuming this is some kind
Bahamas,
of working,
I think.
Working lab.
I think it was the real deal.
It's gorgeous. It's the marine biology lab is filled with, you know, these hot, sexy scientists and
totally,
you know, tight khakis and safari white. I'm getting a Source Family meets Jimmy Buffett by way of a Japanese onsen vibe.
Heaven.
And I'm loving it. And George C. Scott is in shorts, and I'm okay with that. And yep. I'm on board. I'm very on board. I'm also, for any listener, the Floridians out there listening, I'm getting sea camp vibes. And if you went to high school in Florida in the 80s,
I'm in the dark here.
You'll know what I mean. It's like a thing you go to, like in Massachusetts, you
it's
go
like
to
space
a plantation.
Camp,
it's kind of, I don't know. You stay in a cabin and touch fish. And I think it's somewhere in the Keys.
Okay, cool. So then double your pleasure, Duncan, because then we cut to Sorvino and get his first dialogue scene where he upholds exactly what you just said about him, where he says about himself, "I'm dangerously unrefined." I thought, man, what a great line. He's intimidating, he's chaotic, and he's clearly after something, but we have no idea really what it is. He just wants in on whatever George C. Scott is up to.
Yeah, and in that scene, Sorvino is shaking down the go-between for the foundation that funds right. the island, shaking him down for an invite to this private island. And there's also an interesting line there where Sorvino is asking, well, if I'm a reporter, why can't I go to the island? Is there something to hide? This scientist just wants to keep everything secret, keep his young, sexy wife away from everyone, which I thought was an interesting little meta line that is George C. Scott's much younger wife, and they are playing a couple.
Yeah.
And I was like, I felt like it was interesting that they needed to feel like they addressed that in there, the age discrepancy. Again, that was another thread that I wanted explored a little more. I was
the couple's relationship.
The couple's relationship.
Yeah, it's the
George
weak spot.
C. Scott hanging on this sexy little island. I wanted a little more, I don't know, hanky panky going on, and he's a little more Mosquito Coast, like him trying to keep everybody out for no reason. And instead, he's just obsessed with the dolphin. I was like, what about all these gorgeous
people? But we get there.
Here?
Okay.
We get there, and he's talking about a fish. And I'm like, what about the people on the island? I know. It's a mammal. I know. I don't want to hear any tweets about that. It's a mammal. I know.
And then we get a reveal, which is that Alpha can speak. And this was refuted by him in the Q&A early on, where somebody in the audience says, "I heard dolphins could speak." And he basically says, "That's absurd. That's a parlor trick." But actually, that's what Alpha does. And he's hiding it from the world because he's afraid that it will be received poorly and his research will be seen as a circus and he's onto something groundbreaking. Go ahead.
There's a great George C. Scott dialogue here where he's talking about that, where it's, he's being so vague because I am like, what is the big deal? Okay, so the you've taught the dolphin four words. Like, what's going to happen? And George C. Scott is like, who knows what's going to happen? These dolphins could be on cereal boxes, and next thing you know, they're going to have managers and agents and flown around. And you're like, okay, I don't know if that's really going to happen. But then what does happen is so much crazier than that.
It's so
he's correct.
He is correct, and also, I just love the way this movie unfolds. The fact that we're like 15 to 20 minutes in before we find out that there's even the notion that a dolphin can talk. And not only can he, it's not a trick. It's not like a parrot. He is communicating and he has raised this dolphin as a child. And it's, I don't know. It's, for me, it's delivered so organically that I believe this dolphin. Literally, the dolphin that I'm seeing on screen, I'm believing that he is a character in this story and not just a silly dolphin in a movie. It works for me.
Your passion is palpable. Now, besides not letting you go in a sensory deprivation tank, did your mother also not let you watch Flipper? Because that was a very popular show that was
Did Flipper talk?
But he understood things.
It's
like
not
Lassie.
A trick, Duncan. Alpha can talk. We get walked through the backstory of how this happened in this cool scene where it doesn't make much sense, but the guy, the fundraising guy, basically his boss at the foundation shows up and says, Paul Sorvino is trying, doesn't he? He says, Paul Sorvino is trying to come here. What's up? I have to answer to someone. We can't just give you money and have no results. And he's like, okay.
I know. I kind of loved, I was like, what did they think George C. Scott was doing with the millions and millions of dollars? Like training dolphins to do what?
I know.
And he doesn't give them any
information. He just says carte blanche.
He's like, I'm working with dolphins. I can't. It's too important for me to give you any information. Yeah, I love the sequence.
He walks through it's like an island of in the. There's a window into the tank, so it's below the tank, and you can see into the dolphin tank. But in the middle of the room is an island of reel-to-reel recorders. And as George C. Scott is explaining the history of their research, he presses play on the different reels to reel and walks you through the evolution of Alpha speaking.
First month, first year. Alpha speaking in his own language, of course. Second month, second year. 13 months to isolate the clicking patterns from the squeaks and the whistles and the groans. Seventh month, second year. Our first phoneme. Fourth year, here comes our first morpheme. Phoneme P. Plus phoneme equal.
And I think it's pretty effective cinematic moment. And as the realization of what is happening here washes over the character who's getting the exposition, he turns and looks through the window behind him, and Alpha is right there looking at him. I think it's kind of a magical moment.
That's one of my favorite scenes in the movie too. It feels like Nichols is really feeling himself. He's doing kind of a Kubrickian 2001 thing. I loved that. Might be my favorite scene in the movie.
Alpha is basically regressing a little bit as a teenager. And so in comes the sex bribe. And that is that they have another dolphin named Beta who was raised in the wild. And they introduce Beta to Alpha with the hopes that somehow that will spark him to not regress. But instead, it actually makes him stop speaking English and reverting to dolphin speak. And meanwhile, Sorvino is closing in on the high seas.
And I love all this. I will say, when you bribe a dolphin with dolphin sex, it's almost a sin against nature that then I'm expecting as an audience member the other shoe to drop. Where I'm like, oh, what is George C. Scott gonna suffer now that he's messing with nature? That's okay. Not really where the movie goes, even though he does suffer.
It seems like you get hung up on expectations and you're not living in the moment.
Well, if the moment
this dolphin story
something other
your
than
mind wouldn't wander.
What the last third of this movie was, I'm watching it, especially, and you know, once I watched it, I kind of, you know, you go back and think about what would I do differently. Mm-hmm. That's me, Lex. That's me. That's the artist in me. I can't stop creating.
Okay.
Even when I'm watching. So, but let's, I don't want to, you know, you're so passionate about these dolphins. I just want to keep feeling your passion.
Yeah, I'm just looking at my notes now. The dolphin stuff is so convincing. This is a beautiful movie. So we covered those. This doesn't work with Duncan. Let me just scratch those off the list.
Let's put a pin in the plot synopsis. And I just want to talk about George C. Scott for a second because he's very good. I enjoyed him in this movie. He's super watchable. I am a big fan. But at the same time, I'm watching this movie and I can't help thinking, what would this be like if it was like Richard Dreyfuss's Hooper character? I want, besides the fact
tell me.
When I'm watching George C. Scott, I'm waiting for the explosion.
Son of a bitch! I believe!
And this is a movie where that doesn't particularly come.
No, you're right.
I thought to fit into this milieu of the sexy marine biology lab that's a little bit hippie. It's like a little utopia.
Yes,
right?
It is.
That's why I was picturing like kind of hippie Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah.
Where he would just fit in there and be this
What if that was kind of one universe, Piper, part of the Jaws universe, and Hooper does just roll up? How great would that be?
Instead, you've got George C. Scott. I mean, George C. Scott feels like the guy who should be choppering in and stealing these dolphins. You know what I mean?
Well,
I mean,
he is that in Firestarter.
I don't believe George C. Scott would be hanging out with any dolphins unless they were like mixing him cocktails with their little fins. He does a good job.
You're telling me in a dolphin movie, George C. Scott is the weak link?
He's not
full Scott.
He's interestingly miscast.
Interesting. I hear you. I totally hear you and can see that. That's a great point. I think I'm really charmed with the Nichols Henry of it all, especially how they handle the premise. There are comedic character notes. There's some comedic tones every once in a while, but they're handled pretty deftly. But this is a straight movie, and it tricked me in that way. So every turn that happens, the turn that comes next is that Paul Sorvino threatens that he shows up on the island and he basically says, I know what you're up to and I am going to expose what's going on. So George C. Scott wants to get ahead of it and do a press release and basically control the narrative.
It looks like we're going to be forced to come out with the information first to keep this whole thing from turning into some kind of freak show.
But what it does reveal is some of the stuff that you were complaining you didn't know about in the first 5 minutes about George C. Scott, which he has this conversation with one of the young scientists who finally, he basically says what's on our mind, which is like, this whole thing that we're doing, he literally says, it's weird and it feels like a dream. And George C. Scott's character says that when Alpha started speaking, he had a feeling that he hadn't had since he was this young scientist age, that there were infinite possibilities. And Duncan, that got me. It touched me. And I'm on board with more and more of what Dr. Tyrell reveals about why he's here and his beliefs about capitalist constructs and humanity and what not to trust and his belief in these dolphins as pure creatures. He says we should become like them, instinct and energy. Duncan, it is a great midlife crisis character. In my book.
Again, I just feel like I would
character,
buy it more
from maybe
like,
not the like, performance.
It's like Donald Sutherland. If it looked like this guy had ever toked a Jay in his life. But you and Gene Siskel, so you're in good company.
Siskel?
Siskel also very much connected with the George C. Scott characters. Kind of kumbaya vision of the dolphins, and that kind of humanity through line caused him to give this movie a good review, whereas Pauline Kael clucked her tongue.
She sure
and
did.
Said, if, oh, boy. And I got to tell you, now that we're talking about it, I remember in the biography, there's also a little anecdote from Buck Henry about how he did the voice of the dolphins.
What? I didn't know that.
Oh boy. Okay, he cracks some IMDb or something. He did the voice of one of the dolphins.
Oh yeah, you take those as fact.
He's off camera. Well, this was in the book. He's off camera doing the dolphin voice, and he's thinking to himself, oh boy, how did I hit rock bottom?
You've had quite a day, haven't you? Pa? Pa? Why does Pa speak?
Pa, speak.
Yes, why Pa speak? He does it for me. Why does Pa speak to Pa?
Pa, no, Pa.
When the dolphin speaks, it is a dolphin voice. It is sort of rudimentary English.
It's good.
It works.
Yeah.
he calls George C. Scott Pa, and George C. Scott calls him Fa, Alpha. And so they have these dialogues, and then there's this scene with that, the line of stuffy suits from the foundation, all because George C. Scott wants to control the narrative and reveal the truth about Fa. He basically does a presentation for the board of the foundation on, what's happening. And it's established that Fa does not, understand the notion of lying, Duncan.
No. And you would think these stuffy suits might cut the dolphin some slack and understand he doesn't understand lying. Irony, maybe. Once we get to these stuffy suits, I'm feeling like we are dabbling in camp. I actually thought the movie was going to lean into the humor a little more in this
scene. We stay at a distance.
I feel like Nichols is losing the thread here. It reminds me of the old adage to add laughs to your drama so the audience doesn't. And I feel like I'm chuckling, but I'm not supposed to during this part of the movie.
The
vice should be tightening. And actually, I could picture you chuckling. I was like, I bet Lex is expecting me to be laughing at this dolphin voice.
Well, I am like, I marvel at it. I marvel at the whole thing's existence. I marvel that this is a film that exists in the world. And I find, so there is a turn that happens, and I don't think we should reveal it. What do you think?
It's on the poster.
Well, it's don't look at the poster. That's because the marketing was grabbing at marketing department was grabbing at straws.
It's horrible. Blue Lagoon with dolphins. Hold it. We've had a whole sidebar discussion about this. We shouldn't be doing this on the podcast about spoilers, where I said we need to have spoiler alerts and not do. And you're like, no one cares about spoilers. And now that we're doing your favorite film of all time, we're not going to do the spoiler, which is the interesting thing to talk about in this movie. And it's not even a spoiler. It's the last half of the movie. No, you want to do a no spoilers rule? Let's institute that next time for my movie.
All right. Fine.
I mean, I wouldn't even know what to talk about.
Well, I like that we created some tension here and people are waiting with bated breath if we are going to reveal
this. Not really, because they probably just saw the poster.
They can't get an old 1973 poster with George C. Scott's big fucking mug on it and dolphins jumping over his head. Nobody cares.
I feel like you think this. You've unearthed this movie from a vault and nobody's ever heard of it. It's the long buried Mike Nichols, George C. Scott film that's been
excavated. No one's watched it. Nobody cares, Jerry Lewis,
The Day the Clown Cried of dolphin movies. I think people know. Our listeners, our very film literate listeners, know. I'm not going to say it. You say it.
All right. The screw turns when when George C. Scott goes to land to have the press conference he said he was going to have, and it turns out nobody has gathered for it, and the paranoid thriller really begins with the character of Mrs. Rome, played by Elizabeth Wilson, who is always terrific.
I don't know her.
She's Roz in 9 to 5. The administrator who is always digging for dirt and telling Dabney Coleman what everybody's up to. She's the mole. And she's in a bunch of Nichols films. She's always fantastic. Okay. He realizes, Trish Van Devere's with him, he realizes he's been set up and it was all a distraction because the bad guy, who we assume to be Paul Sorvino, has removed the dolphin from the island, both dolphins from the island. They return to find out that Paul Sorvino is not actually the bad guy, but instead, as he says, he's the watchers watching the watchers. And he has been digging in on the foundation that has been funding George C. Scott's work all along, and reveals, all right, I'm going to let you say what the reveal is, what the foundation has actually been up to and planning all this time. They've actually known about these smart dolphins.
Okay. Turn the volume down if you don't have access to the internet and don't know what this movie's about.
Unwittingly, he had trained a dolphin to kill the president of the United States.
The nefarious plot that is going on and being plotted by the foundation that is incredibly well thought out is to take these two verbal dolphins and use them, strap a bomb to one of them and use them to blow up the president, kill the president.
On a boat.
Who is vacationing nearby in a exclusive cove on a boat.
And we come to discover that there's been a spy in their midst all along, played by one of the young scientists, and he is a demolition expert. And so he has the dolphins, or Fa trusts the character of David and believes everything that David says, because David says that Pa told him so. And so they, because dolphins can't discern a lie, do everything that David tells them to. And so the plot is in motion.
And what I love about this, first of all, when they take the dolphins and they're in these gurneys and then they're kind of sprinkling water on them, I'm very sad. I'm very disturbed.
The dolphins are terrific actors.
They're great. I'm upset by the dolphin voices. When the dolphins get upset, I get upset. This plot is so ludicrous. It's funny, even knowing what was going to happen, I kept waiting for them to explain why dolphins would be so good at delivering a bomb to the president's boat.
Well, they're undetected. They're just fish in the sea, mammals in the sea. As opposed to a submarine, which would show up on radars or something.
But Duncan, is there nothing about them verbalizing that would then change the plan? And then they have to kill the dolphins because they're afraid the dolphins might talk. And it's like, you've seen the dolphins talk. They only know five words. How are they going to? So It's interesting. There's a great moment where Paul Sorvino, where they put it together.
Yeah.
Where Paul Sorvino
they
asks
have this great
about this exclusive
Pacula type scene. Yeah.
Where are they? The dolphins. I would guess they're on that yacht. What are they going to do with them? That's the part we don't know. What we do know is that they've been working on this thing since you started teaching your friend Alpha to talk.
How do we stop them?
What this exclusive cove, who goes there? And George C. Scott's like, oh, you know, super rich people, like maybe the president, maybe. Yeah. And then hold it. They're going to use these dolphins to assassinate the president. Now we've gone past camp and we're into Kitsch land. I mean, Mike
yeah,
Nichols
but it's not
is
treated
checked
like,
out.
Like Kitsch.
It's not. But this movie, which looks so good.
So
and
good.
Technically. Everything is fantastic.
That's what I mean.
But
like
even,
it just
but no, not until
delivers.
Until this sequence. When we see the president's boat, we don't even know where the hell this is. It's like an insert shot from another movie.
I will agree with that. And then
the suits, nefarious like bad guys on the boat are. I mean, they're like caricatures out of a silent movie. It's like one guy has a cigar, one guy's
that.
Why am I? I'm being a real naysayer. But
absolutely right.
Checked out when I'm getting excited. I'm like, all right, well, let's see these dolphins do their thing.
You're correct. It is as if at that point they ran out of faith and ran out of money and kind of phoned this last section in. Basically,
you know, just the last sequence. It's not like, hey, we can get away without that part where the dolphins do try and assassinate the president, like the payoff. Yeah, let's just
and there's no
that
snag.
In.
Basically, they tell Alpha to stop Beta.
Can you find B? Stop B. The thing on B's back will hurt Mac. Fa, stop B now.
And Alpha goes and stops Beta, and they turn around and go back to the bad guy's boat. And the one blatantly comedic line is like something out of a Mel Brooks movie when the guys look out the window as they hear the clunk of the mine getting stuck on their boat. And one guy looks out the window and goes, oh shit. And then the boat explodes in a massive cloud of fire.
Maybe the worst piece of dialogue Buck Henry's ever written.
I think maybe that was the save at that point. They were like, oh boy, can we just slap a laugh on there?
Yeah.
But we do have this emotional aftermath on the island, which I do think works.
Yeah,
which is the dolphins return to the island, and George C. Scott knows that the bad guys are going to be coming for them, and the dolphins will be killed. And he tells Alpha that he has to go out to sea with Beta and not talk to humans again. Like this, the whole relationship that they built across the movie and his life's work has to be cast aside so that they can return to the ocean and be dolphins. And it's heartbreaking as George C. Scott and Trish Van Devere hide out from the planes that are now swooping the island as Alpha is crying out for Pa from the water.
It's brutal. Very painful. It's brutal.
It's
very upsetting.
Bitter anti-establishment ending.
Ma loves Fa.
Stop it, Maggie. Let him go.
Ma loves B.
B! Fa! Light!
No! No light! Pa is not!
So, I don't want to see George C. Scott sad. I want to see him full of rage.
Fury.
Again. Yeah.
Well, then, have you seen Rage?
I haven't. That's part of George
either.
C. Scott.
That might be the chaser. So let me ask you this, Duncan. If you hadn't read the poster before this, do you think that maybe this movie would have hit you in a different way if you didn't know the turn, or would you have seen it coming from?
I don't know. I just feel like it's seeped into Day of the Dolphin. What's that about? Oh, dolphins try and kill someone. Listen, I've been a little negative, and I've enjoyed busting your balls over the course of the podcast. I've also enjoyed your enthusiasm. I really, when we started the podcast, I didn't know which way I was going to go, because I know you're going to ask me if my mind was blown or not.
I am.
I'm smarting from our last episode where your mind was not blown by a fantastically cast, off the wall, oddball Shaggy Dog story.
Which one was this?
Stay Hungry.
I'm just kidding.
Stay Hungry. Oh, God. This movie, to me, the first half, I'm totally on board. I think just that last third is so thrown away. If I could just replace it with almost anything, I don't know. But then at the same point, I love the look of the movie. I feel like I want to have a little Caribbean Florida summer Day of the Dolphin party where I throw this on a big screen.
The music's fantastic.
Wearing little shorts and we're drinking cocktails. Does that make it a good movie? I don't know. I'm going to give you a gift.
Okay.
And I'm also not going to split hairs. Like, you almost ran the podcast off the rails last episode because you were like, I'll give it a middle of the road. That's not what we do here. You wouldn't make a decision one way or the other. So I don't want to be that guy. So I'm going to give it.
That's because you pushed the issue. I said it didn't blow my mind, and you were like, what? And I just
wanted to make sure. You were like, I don't think it blew my mind. I was like, all right, for the people keeping score at home, did it blow your mind? Or did it not blow your mind? Anyway, so yeah, I'll be very clear, but I'll also give a caveat.
Okay,
I'm going to put it.
That sounds just as clear as day.
Because of the look of the movie and because I enjoyed myself for most of it, I'm going to give it and I was also talking to a scientist friend of mine and dropped John Lilly's name. And I don't know. I felt like we had a nice conversation after that. I'm going to give it a blow my mind with a warning.
Okay.
That kitschy camp picks will not be looked as kindly upon in the future. And
it's not kitschy camp.
Part of the reason, maybe actually the whole reason I'm giving it a blow my mind rating is because I was expecting to come on the podcast and you were going to be giggling away at the talking about the dolphin voice and wasn't that goofy? Cute and hilarious. No, and that I we were on the same way. Page about that being the part of the film that works the best. I am going to reward that behavior that <babe. laughs> with saying this blew my mind.
I'm glad.
Crystal clear, as always.
I'm glad that the parts we basically agree that the parts that are charming about this movie are charming and worth a watch. And hey, if you have it on in the background during a tropical cocktail party, it will serve you, it sounds like.
Exactly. All I want is a new second half, Richard Dreyfuss in the George C. Scott role, some hanky-panky, some characterization of the sexy scientists.
I forgot about the hanky-panky.
Those scientists, I mean, we get some Edward Herman, and that's about it. And yes, I am including Edward Herman when I describe a group of sexy scientists. That's the only time Edward Herman is going to be.
He looks good in 73.
He does look good. He does look good. He's kind of like a nerd hunk.
Yeah, he definitely is.
Something. I don't know.
Mike is a consummate artist. He can't not commit himself totally to what he does. And he had this great idea when he talked to each of us individually. He said, what do you think this is about? And I said, well, this is about species talking to one another. I said, I think this is has a spiritual dimension that is amazing. And he lit up like a Christmas tree. He said, Herm, he said, with a little more work, between the dolphin and George, he can then ask the dolphin, because he has no guile, what did your father tell you? What did the father of the universe tell you? So that you could speak directly to God through this. I thought, wow, maybe it was him picking up what I was interested in at the time. because he's very clever about eliciting what a person is good at. But I thought, man, it made me feel completely committed to this project, that this was really going to be wonderful.
Well, we've done it again. And next time we'll be back with one of yours. I'm excited, as always. What do we want to say as far as any?
I always want to say, people think we're making a lot of money doing this podcast. That's actually not true. So drop a review, a rating on.
Sure, you can always
help
us. I'm
bad about doing that too. So I understand. But I mean, come on.
Hey.
Come on. Take a second. Drop a review. Drop us some stars. Right? Is that what it is? Stars? What do the kids leave now? Stars?
I think we should pull the chute.
Goodbye, Fa.
Pa!